Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 3 of the Freedom of Information podcast. My name's Ibrahim Hassan. You're listening to the third episode of a monthly podcast program designed to bring busy public sector practitioners up to date with the latest developments in freedom of information law. In this episode, I shall be discussing the latest news about the government's proposals to change the Freedom of Information fees regime, the Information Commissioner's new publication scheme initiative, the latest decisions from the Information Tribunal, and the latest decisions from the Information Commissioner's Office. Last month we discussed the government's recently announced proposals to change the Freedom of Information charging regime. Maurice Frankel of the Campaign for Freedom of Information gave us his thoughts. Under the new proposals, public authorities would be able to include reading time, consideration time, and consultation time when calculating the cost of retrieving information. This could mean that the cost limit is reached much more quickly than at present, and thereby allowing public authorities to refuse more requests on cost grounds. The Campaign for Freedom of Information has criticised the government for failing to formally consult on these proposals. The intention was to bring forward legislation by the end of the year. However, following pressure from the campaign, as well as the Society of Newspaper Editors, it seems that the government may be about to give in. Speaking at the Newspaper Society's annual conference lunch, Tony Blair said, "We will certainly consult you and others very widely on it." As yet, there are no details about the consultation process. More details of this story are on the Hold the Front Page website. The Campaign for Freedom of Information has submitted a formal response to the Department of Constitutional Affairs about the proposed changes. More details can be found on their website at www.cfoi.org.uk. The Information Commissioner recently announced that it has extended the expiry date for publication schemes to 2008. During this period, it will carry out a development and maintenance initiative to disseminate good practice, as well as to obtain feedback on the operation of the schemes. The Information Commissioner will be running workshops and setting up an advisory group to take this work forward. The first stage is for the Commissioner to receive comments on central and local government publication schemes. The deadline for this is the 4th of December, and comments should be made to Paul Damerill at the Information Commissioner's office. More details can be found on the Commissioner's website, www.ico.gov.uk. This month, only one decision has been published by the Information Tribunal. In Dr. Lam and the Information Commissioner, dated the 16th of November 2006, the Tribunal found that the Information Commissioner was wrong in law to issue a decision notice upholding the Cabinet Office's determination that it did not hold the requested information. The Tribunal criticised the Information Commissioner for its failure to take into account the lack of clarity in the complainant's original request. The Tribunal ruled that, taking account of the importance of the Section 16 duty to advise and assist, as well as the Section 45 Code of Practice, more should have been done by the public authority and the Commissioner to ascertain the precise information requested. Interestingly, the Tribunal disagrees with the Information Commissioner's guidance on Section 16. The Commissioner's view is that a public authority cannot inquire into the reasons why a request is being made. However, the Tribunal says that the factual context in which a request is made is relevant. If a request is ambiguous, the public authority should seek not only further details of the request, but also seriously consider formulating questions designed to elicit the true and precise nature of the request and the complainant's intention. This is an interesting departure from the previously accepted principle that freedom of information is applicant blind. Let's move on to decisions made by the Information Commissioner. There have been 7 decisions this month. Surprisingly, 4 of these have been about the environmental information regulations. Let's examine these first. In previous podcasts, we have considered decisions where more guidance has been given by the Commissioner about the application of the environmental information regulations. The first 3 decisions this month show that public authorities are still confused as to which regime applies to an information access request. As we have discussed in the September podcast, the Commissioner has now taken the view that all requests for planning information should be treated as environmental information requests. In a decision involving Stafford Borough Council dated the 14th of November 2006, the complainant asked the council for a copy of legal advice supplied to it by its legal adviser in connection with a planning dispute. The request was declined by the council on the basis that the information was subject to legal professional privilege and was therefore exempt under Section 42 of the Freedom of Information Act. The Commissioner concluded that the request should have been dealt with under the Environmental Information Regulations. However, the information was still subject to legal professional privilege and was exempt from disclosure by virtue of Regulation 12(5)(b) of the Environmental Regulations. This, according to the Information Commissioner, is similar to Section 42 of the Freedom of Information Act, and so here it did not matter that the public authority had chosen to apply the wrong regime. A similar decision involves Salisbury District Council, decided on the 15th of November 2006. The complainant requested copies of letters supporting a tree preservation order which was imposed on his land by the council. The council provided the complainant with unedited copies of the letters where the writers had consented to the disclosure of their identity. Where the writers had not consented, personal information was redacted before copies were disclosed. The council advised the complainant that the redacted information was withheld under Section 40 of the Freedom of Information Act because it was personal data. The Commissioner was satisfied that the information was appropriately withheld, although the Environmental Information Regulation should have been applied. The information would still have been exempt under Regulation 13, which is similar to Section 40 of the Freedom of Information Act. The information was personal data, and the writers of the letters had an expectation of privacy. A similar decision involves Warwick District Council, which was decided on the 22nd of November 2006. The complainant asked the council for information which it held about the purchase of land owned by the council and the complainant. The council provided some of the requested information, but withheld other information, citing the exemption contained in Section 41 for breach of confidence and Section 42 for legal professional privilege. The commissioner decided that the sale of land information could be regarded as environmental information, but since the outcome was the same, it did not consider the matter under the Environmental Information Regulations. He decided that Section 41 and 42 were correctly engaged in this case, and that the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest in disclosure. In relation to Section 41 and breach of confidence, the Commissioner noted that there was an acrimonious relationship between the company purchasing the land and the complainant, and that disclosure of the information may assist the complainant in litigation and so would be harmful to the company. In the September edition of this podcast, we discussed the tribunal decision in the case of Marlowe and the issue of when information is held for the purposes of the Freedom of Information Act. But when is information held for the purposes of the Environmental Information Regulations? The decision in Doncaster Council, dated the 21st of November 2006, provides some guidance. The complainant made four requests for information to the council relating to aircraft noise at Robin Hood Airport, which was recorded by the Fixed Noise Monitoring Terminal at Bawtree. The council refused the complainant's requests, stating that it did not hold the requested information because it could only be accessed by a phone line to a third party's computer. The commissioner decided that the information was held for the purposes of the Environmental Information Regulations. He referred to the guidance in the tribunal decision in Marlowe and also quoted a Section 106 planning agreement between the council and the airport. This gave the council a contractual right to the information as well as to receive continuous reports. This right was not limited in any way, and so it was decided that the information was held for the purposes of the regulations. Let's move on to the Information Commissioner's decisions about freedom of information, of which there are only three this month. The first decision shows the importance of schools and colleges having access to good advice about freedom of information. Even now, there is a lack of understanding amongst such organisations as to who is responsible for freedom of information and what their legal obligations are. A decision involving the governing body of Garforth Community College was decided on the 22nd of November 2006. The complainant requested information relating to bullying complaints at the college and also information about three teachers at the college. The college stated that it did not hold information about bullying complaints, and the information about the three teachers was exempt on the grounds that it was personal data under Section 40 of the Freedom of Information Act. The Commissioner decided that the college did hold the information about the bullying complaints, the college should have cited the specific exemption it sought to rely on under Section 40, that disclosure would contravene a Section 10 notice served on the college by the teachers. In addition, the specific exemption it sought to rely on was indeed a qualified exemption. The college had failed to explain the public interest test. In any event, in the Commissioner's view, the wrong exemption had been claimed. The information should have been withheld on the grounds that disclosure would breach one of the data protection principles. This is actually an absolute exemption, and so there is no need to consider the public interest test. This is an important decision to read in order to understand the differences between the different parts of Section 40. Whilst in the main Section 40 provides absolute exemptions, there is a qualified exemption where a public authority is seeking to rely on the serving of a Section 10 data protection notice as the basis for withholding information. More details about personal data and access under the Freedom of Information Act is on my website www.informationlaw.org.uk. Finally, let me briefly mention the two other Freedom of Information decisions from the Commissioner this month. The decision involving HM Treasury was decided on the 21st of November 2006. The complainant made a request for the information fed into the macroeconomic model used to forecast the performance of the UK economy. The information was withheld under Section 29, Economic Interests of the UK, and Section 35, Formulation of Government Policy. The Commissioner was satisfied that these exemptions were correctly claimed. This decision will be of interest mainly to listeners from central government who may hold information about the UK economy. Finally, for listeners still getting to grips with the costs and fees regime, there is the decision involving Marine Accident Investigation Branch, which is part of the Department of Transport. This was decided on the 21st of November 2006. The complainant requested information about the basis of statistics quoted in the Public Authority's 2005 annual report. The request was refused on the grounds of exceeding the cost limit, so the complainant modified his request, and this too was refused on crossed grounds. The Commissioner was satisfied that the cost provisions had been correctly applied and that the costs involved would be over the appropriate limit. That's all the decisions we have time for this month. Don't forget, Act Now Training is running a major Freedom of Information conference on the 13th of December in Manchester, as well as a workshop series where these decisions will be discussed in detail. It also runs seminars on data protection, surveillance law and records management. Full details at www.actnow.org.uk. That concludes this month's podcast. This podcast was brought to you by me, Ibrahim Hassan. I specialise in all aspects of information rights law, particularly freedom of information and data protection. My clients include local authorities, the NHS and government agencies. If you would like specific advice on any of your information law issues, please do not hesitate to contact me. Please continue to let me have your feedback. This is the only podcast of its kind in the UK. There's been more than 1,200 downloads of last month's podcast. The script for that issue is now available to download from the website. If you would like a copy of this month's script, please contact me via my website, which is www.informationlaw.org.uk. Due to the Christmas break, the next podcast will be broadcast at the end of January. I wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Until the next time, goodbye.